You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. How many homeless people live in Washington State? It seems like a relatively simple question, especially since it's the basis for so many important decisions. But figuring out the answer is tough. At the federal level, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development relies on annual counts taken by a veritable army of volunteers over the course of a single night in a community. And according to a recent HUD report, that number counted last year was 25,211 unhoused Washingtonians. That's a 10% increase from just 2 years earlier. It's a staggering number, but here's the thing. It's probably a giant undercount. Many believe HUD's point-in-time count misses a lot of people. In fact, the state's Department of Commerce says that more than 53,000 people experienced homelessness just in King County in 2022. Why are these numbers so wildly different? And how do local governments and organizations use estimates to inform the work that they do to help homeless populations? Sarah Rankin is a professor of law at Seattle University, and she's also the founder and director of the Homeless Rights Advocacy Project. Professor Rankin says that there are inherent difficulties that come with counting people experiencing homelessness. And a point-in-time count system, it's just not the most effective.
Folks are constantly being moved. They're often hidden or hiding. And we've come up with these tortured and profoundly imperfect methods of trying to estimate those numbers. It's a bit like nailing water to the wall or reading tea leaves, whichever simile you prefer. It's important to keep in mind as we have this discussion that a person is more than a number. Human beings are not just numbers in a system, but it does have a crucial importance to the government if somebody's not counted, because the way that governance and decision-making works is that if it can't be measured, if problem can't be measured, then in many ways for governmental purposes, it doesn't exist. It's not known, it's not actionable, or it's not solvable. And so there are all sorts of different methods that are used. Frankly, in my own opinion, I think that the Washington State Commerce numbers are much more credible than the numbers that HUD takes, and I can explain why.
Yeah. So HUD takes this point in time count every year. The folks, volunteers spread out across different parts of the country, and they're looking for folks to tally up, again, just on a single night in usually January. But when you see a point in time count listed somewhere, what's your reaction? What should we know about those numbers?
You're right. It's a snapshot on one day, typically a single night in January. These are estimates that are taken by groups of volunteers in different areas all over the country, and they often use different methodologies from each other. And they often use different methodologies from year to year. So there are inherent flaws in the ways that these numbers are collected. The other piece of it to keep in mind is that HUD makes a distinction between sheltered homelessness, which would be people who are using shelters or other emergency facilities, and unsheltered homelessness, which would be people who are living under highway overpasses or on sidewalks. And HUD only requires those areas to count sheltered homelessness every year. Unsheltered homelessness is only required every other year. So you can already get a sense of the mishmashing that's happening in the calculation of these numbers and just how imperfect they are. The other thing to keep in mind is the impact of COVID. COVID actually prohibited most areas from gathering any realistic numbers of sheltered or unsheltered homelessness for 2021. So all of these numbers, as much of a mess as they are, have even been more severely impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Now let's turn to the Department of Commerce. So the state's Department of Commerce gathers a lot of information and crunches numbers on their estimate for the unhoused population in the state. How do they come to those numbers, and why do you say that you believe they're more credible?
So HUD's way of calculating through the PIT, we know it doesn't count millions of people. It doesn't count folks who are temporarily living with others, who are couch surfing, quadrupling or quintupling up with others due to economic necessity. It doesn't count millions of people who are living in severely substandard or even dangerous housing. It doesn't count jails, hospitals, and dangerous areas that volunteers don't want to go. It doesn't count unaccompanied homeless youth who are far less likely to use a lot of the shelters and services that would otherwise be counted through those PIT counts. Washington's approach is much more nuanced. They take snapshots from a number of different systems that allows them to aggregate data from many agencies and different sources to produce a sense of a much more realistic sense of what those numbers might be. It's still imperfect, but it's a much more realistic sense of those numbers. It's a little wonky to try and explain where the data comes from, but it does come from a variety of different systems that have a far better chance of gauging those different populations that I mentioned than the HUD numbers.
So we're talking things like hospital admissions, maybe applications to social services, things like that, that might get a more accurate picture of folks who are in and out of different types of homelessness. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And it also, the sorts of sources that they pull from also cover some of those people who really should be considered to be unstably housed. The problem with snapshots is someone can be homeless one day and not be homeless the next. And so that's why it's really important to have a sense of how things change over time. The other advantage that the Washington numbers have is they take snapshots in January and in July. So it's twice a year to be able to give you a better sense of what that fluctuation might look like. They also account for the number of people who are continuing to be homeless and unstably housed from the last snapshot, and how many new entrants are coming into those numbers twice a year. So it both has more tentacles in more nuanced areas to gather the data. It produces the data more than once a year, and it is, as a result, just far more realistic. Still imperfect, but realistic.
I spoke with Ann Martins with the King County Regional Homelessness Authority yesterday, and she said that King County is really relying mostly on these Department of Commerce numbers rather than looking at the HUD point in time count. Is that what most organizations and municipalities these days are moving towards, the more nuanced set of data that might give them a better sense of the unhoused community in their area?
I can't say what the trends are for other areas across the country. I do think that I should say I'm on the implementation board for the King County Regional Homeless Authority, but I'm fully capable of critiquing what it does. In this instance, I won't, and that's because I do think that the numbers, the PIT numbers that HUD uses that we've been talking about.
Point in time, yeah.
The point in time counts numbers are certainly better than nothing if you're reading tea leaves, but it's not much better than reading tea leaves. The Washington Commerce numbers are much more credible, much more nuanced, and because they take into account new entrants who has been continuing in groups of homelessness and unstable housing, and it's done twice a year, it's a far more meaningful source of information. So I don't know that what the KCHRA is doing is the trend, but I think it should be. It really depends on how other states are, whether other states are using the same sort of approaches that the Washington State Commerce Department is.
So we know the HUD numbers are not perfect. This report indicates that homelessness in Washington, the total population on a point in time count, grew by about 10% over the last couple of years during the pandemic. What should we know about how unhoused populations are trending in Washington? And what sticks out to you about the latest numbers that you're looking at, either from HUD or from the Department of Commerce?
I caution everybody to, when they're looking at numbers, especially over the last couple of years, because of the impact of COVID, because of the radical impact that COVID had on the way that shelters operate, because of the radical impact that COVID had on our ability to secure distressed properties like hotels and to be able to use those for longer term housing, I think I really caution us to assign too much meaning at all to the numbers anytime between, say, 2021 and this, maybe even next year. What it's useful for is looking at long-term trends. I would not call what's happened during the pandemic as a reliable slice to focus on to determine, really anything useful about what's been going on. Instead, I would do, I think what the Regional Homeless Authority is doing here is actually very smart. They are not just using the Washington numbers, but they are also really turning to qualitative discussions and engagement with people experiencing homelessness to figure out what it is that they need. And how those needs can be better met. Because, we can overnumber this to death. We know that homelessness is a crisis. We know we have an affordable housing crisis in our area. So anything we can do to improve those numbers is going to be important. The key question is, how do you improve those numbers? And so I think that's an important thing that the Regional Homeless Authority is doing by focusing on those qualitative engagement points with unsheltered people to figure out how we can better meet their needs.
Going forward, we know that there were a number of pandemic era programs that experts say helped alleviate some of the pressures on our homelessness system. The Department of Housing and Urban Development, mentioned programs like the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, but a lot of those are wrapping up, they're winding down. What are you and your colleagues keeping an eye on as the pandemic era help dries up and maybe some of the temporary and permanent solutions going forward aren't online yet?
Well, we're lucky we live in Washington. I do think that our legislature is aware of this. We have a number of folks in the legislature who are keenly aware of, what could happen across the country and within our own state. So there's a number of different proposals that are sort of being bandied about to address the issue of affordable housing. What I'm particularly interested in is seeing how our state manages to braid together mental health services and behavioral health services with long-term solutions. Our approach just nationwide in the past has been to over-index on sort of immediate ways of making homelessness invisible, things like shoving people into large, sort of tent, FEMA style tents. That's something that San Francisco experimented with.
Yeah,
Others,
Los Angeles too, yeah.
yes, a number of different states in California. Things that are really just short-term ways of managing the visibility of the problem rather than longer-term ways of making sure that people enter into housing and stay there. And permanent supportive housing is a proven intervention for people experiencing chronic homelessness who struggle with mental and behavioral health issues. That's part of what defines being chronically homeless, is that you have to have a documentable disabling condition that prevents you from working or maintaining housing independently. I am most interested in seeing how our state and our different counties address unsheltered chronic homelessness because that is what most people think homelessness is. The average person sees someone unsheltered on the street or living in an encampment, and they think that that's what homelessness is. It's actually a very small subset of people experiencing homelessness who are chronically homeless. It's about 30% of folks in urban areas tend to be people experiencing chronic homelessness. So you can think of that as being 30% of the tip of the iceberg. The other 70% is completely invisible. And so I am very interested in seeing what our politicians do, what our policymakers do to address visible, unsheltered, chronic homelessness. And we know that the best answer for that is to braid together housing and services. And permanent supportive housing is something where, especially folks in King County, providers in King County are national experts.
Thank you so much for joining us, Sarah Rankin, professor of law at Seattle University and the founder and director of the Homeless Rights Advocacy Project. I really appreciate your perspective and clearing up this confusion that we encountered looking at the numbers.
Thanks so much for having me and for covering such an important topic.
And as you heard, Professor Rankin said it's important to focus on long-term trends when looking at unhoused population data. Well, one trend is clear. There's been a vast reduction in the number of unhoused veterans in the United States in the last 15 years. And it's a slice of success that can teach us a lot about what works to help alleviate homelessness. We're going to talk about it coming up in a minute here on KUOW. Stay with us. We're back with more Soundside on KUOW. I'm Libby Dankman. The idea of a military veteran living on the street or in a homeless shelter carries a special kind of sting for American policymakers. That's motivated Congress to appropriate extra funding and pushed federal agencies, the Departments of Veterans Affairs and HUD, to collaborate on special housing vouchers and services to tackle the problem. It's a major success story, and it carries lessons for addressing homelessness in the civilian population as well. Kara Franke is the director of community housing and outreach services at VA Puget Sound Healthcare System here in the Seattle area. Hi, Kara. How are you? And welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm good. Thank you so much.
So we are looking at the HUD numbers that came out recently, and they showed that nationally the rate of homelessness among veterans actually decreased by roughly 11% during the pandemic between 2020 and 2022. And the broader trend is even more impressive. Nationally, since 2007, the total number of veterans experiencing homelessness has been more than cut in half. What do you think is behind these really impressive improvements in the unhoused veteran population?
There's kind of three main points, really. I think the first is resources. The second would be the integrated staffing team that we have. And then the third would be our incredibly important community partnerships that we have. So I can go into a little bit more detail about each of those if you like.
Yeah, let's talk first about resources. I mean, what kinds of resources are specifically targeted for veterans?
Well, the VA has dedicated a continuum of services to our veteran population so that we can ensure that they obtain and then maintain their housing. So we have services including a very robust outreach team and a community resource and referral center here in Seattle where veterans can come in and get access to services, starting with showers and laundry, all the way up through case management, mental health services, and primary care as well on site. We also go out into the field and meet veterans where they are. So the resources allow us to do that. We have government vehicles and smartphones where we actually reach out to our veterans in the field. From there, we have permanent housing, permanent supported housing programs, such as HUD-VASH, where veterans are assisted in finding permanent housing and then are provided with case management services thereafter to ensure that they obtain and maintain their housing.
And HUD-VASH, just so people know, it's like a combination of Section 8 with services from the VA, right?
Absolutely.
So you don't just have the vouchers that get you on the rental market and get you be able to pay for an apartment, but you also have the follow-up with the VA, which is kind of the wraparound support if, you know, somebody needs that in order to stay in housing, right?
That's the main difference. It's not just housing, it's housing and services. And those services are being provided by skilled mental health and medical professionals to ensure that the whole health is being met in terms of the needs of the veteran. So if that's mental health, if that's substance use treatment programs, if that's psychiatric services, if it's physical therapy, whatever is needed, the veteran's needs are addressed and provided so that we can ensure that they maintain their housing through these services. Yeah, so that I would say is a huge difference between just housing. It's housing and services. And what we find is that when we exit our veterans from our program, less than 10% are exited to non-permanent housing situations. And so the direct result is case management services helps ensure that permanent housing is maintained long term.
And tell me about the special needs for the veteran population, because I know from my time covering veterans that there are also these layers of health care, maybe mental health needs, maybe concurring conditions that occur in the veteran population that might be different from the wider population of folks that are we see unhoused on the streets in the Seattle area. What are the special challenges with meeting the needs of veterans specifically?
Well, veteran populations have had much more exposure to wartime traumas and difficulties with reintegration once they return. I think that's a huge area that's challenging. But I will say mental health across all populations, really within the homeless sector, is probably the most pervasive issue that we're dealing with. And so, again, we find many of those issues trend across populations, veteran and non-veteran as well. But specifically with our veteran population, I think the struggles are once they return from service, that reintegration piece can be very challenging, especially, again, if they are not in their hometown, not where their families are, those kinds of things.
Is the VA currently providing shelter services or long-term apartment situations for veterans themselves, or does the VA contract for that with other organizations?
So there are some VAs across the country that have housing on site. VA Puget Sound is not one of those. We work with community partners to identify housing properties and then with our housing authorities. So it's really, it's a partnership between multiple organizations. The VA provides the services, the housing authority provides the voucher, and the property provides the unit and sometimes additional case management services that come with those units. So it's definitely a community-based partnership.
You know, sometimes I think people look at the level of homelessness in our region and there is a tendency to throw up your hands and say, this is an intractable problem. It is so big and overwhelming. But I really want to highlight the ways that we can draw lessons from successes for the veteran population for the future of looking at interventions that are successful. What lessons have you drawn from your work with the veteran population and the improvements that we've seen over the years with numbers of homeless veterans?
First and foremost, people don't want to be homeless. They want to have housing. And so that, you know, getting rid of that philosophy that some homeless individuals just want to be homeless, that's not accurate. And secondly, I think one of the most measurable pieces that we have is that staffing intervention piece. We have an integrated team, a multidisciplinary team of staff that provide a variety of services, not just to get people housed, but then to ensure that they maintain their housing ongoing. And that's not a short-term intervention. That takes sometimes years to stabilize an individual to ensure that they are able to integrate, to live in a unit, to pay rent, and then even more so to contribute to society through employment or volunteerism or other types of social interactions. So that piece is critical to the long-term housing. And then the final piece, again, is that community integration and collaboration. Without our community partners, we could not do this job by ourselves. And the work that the community has done through the years, utilizing the coordinated entry system, which has been a phenomenal resource that facilitates our communication with one another and also ensures that veterans are connected to the right door the first time they reach out for services. They're not being, you know, asked to repeat their story every time they interact with someone. That's a huge piece in ensuring that we build rapport and appropriately provide the right intervention the first time. So those factors, that community partnership, the skilled staffing, and the resources that we have in order to ensure that veterans obtain and maintain housing, I think is the main factor that's a little bit different from our non-veteran community partners.
Kara Franke is the Director of Community Housing and Outreach Services at VA Puget Sound Healthcare System. Thank you so much, Kara, for sharing your perspective and the work that you're doing at VA Puget Sound for unhoused veterans. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And for some context, according to the King County Regional Homelessness Authority's dashboard, at the end of 2022, 729 veteran households in King County were experiencing homelessness. That's about a 37% decrease from 2020. Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.